Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 766. It's the 3rd of May 2017. On the podcast today, I have Algie Clough, Chairman and CEO of Clough Natural Resources. Ticker there is CLNR, and Algie talks about the progress of the company on their current assets and their plans going forward. Also on the podcast, George Frangiskides, Chairman of Alba Mineral Resources, ALBA, goes through some of the highlights from their final results released today. Also, Hamish Harris, Chairman of Gunsind, that's G-U-N, Gun, discusses some of their investments that he thinks could be producing news in the coming weeks. I also have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Codal Minerals, ticker there is K-O-D. And financial analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about results due for Morrisons and Next in the next few days. And as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Algie Clough, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Clough Natural Resources. That's CLNR ticker. Algie, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure.
Now, for people not aware of your company, Algie, can you give a brief summary as to what you're all about there, please?
Yes, we are a British company involved purely in British territorial waters, UK North Sea. We're a young company, but with much offshore expertise contained within our management. We have no debt, and we have no commitments, unlike most other independent companies. We are committed to securing partners to drill our two Southern North Sea gas licenses, which contain substantial prospective resources amounting to 2.4 TCF of gas. We are further very much concerned to submit applications in the 30th round, which is the next round of North Sea licensing, which not only will contain exploration licenses as usual, but also for the first time the department, the Oil and Gas Authority, will be inviting applications for what they call small pools, which are existing discoveries which were judged by the major oil companies in the main not to be large enough to justify the construction of pipelines and platforms, and have been relinquished back to the government, but do contain up to 5 billion barrels of oil dispersed through these discoveries. This is of great interest to us. We're going to commit some engineering studies, economic studies, and as is obvious, if one manages to secure some of these licenses, it eliminates most of the exploration risk, and further, one obtains reserves without actually paying for them.
I see.
This is unusual. Yeah. The North Sea really now, Mark 1 in the North Sea is over. All the big discoveries have been made. That's not to say there isn't a lot of oil and gas left in the North Sea. So we're really entering a Mark 2 phase, which will be dominated by the independents, not the majors.
I see. And where are you? And where are you with this application? When are we? I assume you've applied.
No, they were going to announce the blocks which they're inviting applications for in May, but I would expect the general election has rendered that delayed for a few weeks. However, we would anticipate the awards being made by the first quarter of next year, if not perhaps before Christmas.
Okay, all right. And at the moment, so your focus lays where at the moment on these applications, or is it on your existing resource base?
Yes, I mean, our primary focus is to secure a partner or partners to drill, to farm in to the two licenses which we have in the Southern North Sea, where we have prospective resources cumulative, I say, of 2.4 TCF of gas. So that's really our primary concern at the moment.
Yeah, and what's the feeling like there at the moment? Because I know going back a couple of years, I mean, oil prices have certainly started to stabilise around $50. What's the feeling there? Is there more optimism here?
Yeah, so there's definitely a better atmosphere in the North Sea, and I wouldn't say it's boom conditions, but there are more farm outs occurring. There was the hurricane, significant discovery the other day. There's generally seeing more activity, so it's against a much healthier backdrop that we are seeking partners.
Yeah, and Algie, you are very experienced in this area, this sector. I mean, of the last few years, has it been? You know, have you seen worse than it's been through of late?
Well, it virtually became paralysed, the North Sea, from two points of view. The first problem the North Sea has got, and continues to have, is this decommissioning issue, which casts a cloud over the companies who have got depleting, producing oil and gas fields. At some point, they're going to have to decommission them. And one of the reasons there's been no corporate activity in the North Sea is that no one really knows what is involved in decommissioning these assets. The second thing is that the last chancellor was deaf to the submissions from us explorationists to introduce some fiscal stimulus to encourage us to explore. It's a very expensive place to explore in. The Norwegian government intelligently recognized that and introduced a 78% rebate for companies operating in Norwegian waters of the cost of an exploration hole. That, unsurprisingly, galvanized exploration in Norway and led to the discovery of a number of new oil fields. And we are hoping that the new slate of ministers, and there's probably be yet another slate after the election, will realize that the North Sea still contains substantial resources yet to be discovered. But we independents are going to bear the brunt of finding these reserves, and we do need some help.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, I mean, after some Brexit, that hopefully ministers will look more favourably on domestic explorers like yourself? Yeah.
Well, there's obviously some sort of energy mix which the North Sea remains part, but it is a sophisticated, mature basin. We've got all the infrastructure, we've got everything sitting here. And meanwhile, we're importing more and more of our natural gas, I think as much as 50% at the moment. And from a security point of view, let alone any other point of view, supply point of view, we must take the North Sea much more seriously than we have been doing.
Yeah, okay. And as far as Clough Natural Resources is concerned, in the next few months, what kind of news can shareholders expect from you, Algie?
Well, there's nothing I can promise. I hope that we will achieve at least one farm out on these two assets, 2248 and 2252 in the Southern North Sea, which would lead to one or more wells being drilled, perhaps within 12 months.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Well, if anyone's listening right now, Algie, and likes the sound of what you're doing there in the North Sea, and they're not following you on Vox, can you give them sort of three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, the first thing is that we have got very high quality licenses, the ones I've referred to. There's a lot of gas which we're looking at discovering here. And that is ready to drill now. The second is we are very well placed to obtain licenses in the 30th round, And the third reason is there are no inhibitions, because we have no debt and we have no commitments, and we have got a energetic and experienced staff.
Excellent. Algie, thanks for talking to me, and I look forward to chatting to you very soon. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Frandiskades, chairman of Alba Minerals, ALBA ticker. George, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks, Justin. Good to speak to you.
Now, you've released your final results today for the year ended 30th November 2016. Before we go into the finer detail of that, George, could you go through, for people not aware of what you do there, what's Alba Minerals all about, please?
Sure, no problem at all. Well, we are both invested in oil and gas assets, and we also have some exploration mining assets that we run. So on the oil and gas side, we're in the UK Weald Basin in Horsehill and Brockham. And in the mining field, we have in particular a 90% interest in a graphite project in southern Greenland called Amitsoq.
Excellent. And those are, for all intents and purposes, your focus at the moment, are they, George?
They are, yes. I mean, we're always keeping under other projects and opportunities under review, as an exploration company should. And so we're fairly nimble in that respect. But we're obviously very keen on both the oil and gas side and in particular Amitsoq. We have other legacy projects, but those, I'd say, at the moment are definitely our focus.
Okay, let's drill down into the detail here. What's been happening in the last 12 months and going forward as well? What are you looking at doing there in those two focused areas?
Yeah, well, we've just announced our final results today, Justin, and as a pre-revenue company, I guess the numbers are probably not as interesting as if we're in a revenue scenario, but I mean, they do show significant progress, I would say, as an exploration company. So our net assets are up from £2.5 million to £3.8 million. We've put in, you know, close to £1 million in investing into our projects and assets this year, as we did last year. So we continue to invest in these assets and to develop their potential. So I think those are the key takeaways from our final results. I think the other thing to take away, and when you review the activities over the past year, hopefully shareholders and others will see how busy we've been. So both on the oil and gas side, a lot has happened, and also on Amitsoq.
Yeah, so take us through. I know I'm very aware of, you know, Angus Energy there and Brockham, what they're doing there. But take us through, you know, the UK activities and where you see this going, hopefully.
Sure. Well, on Horse Hill, which is an investment that we've got 15% of, Horse Hill Developments, which is the operator there, we last year had some fantastic results from our flow testing at Horse Hill. Since then, we've been in a fairly lengthy regulatory stage, which is essential in UK onshore environment. So we've been doing planning. We put a planning application in, as everyone should know, and we hope to have that decision, and as hopefully a positive decision and outcome in the next couple of months. So that will then enable us to go forward as a consortium and do extended flow tests at Horse Hill, which will tell us a lot about commerciality of the Horse Hill field. So that's pretty exciting. So we're on the cusp there of a significant development at Horse Hill. At Brockham, as you say, Angus are the operator, and they also did some fantastic work just recently, where they've gone into Brockham and sidetracked an existing well and come up with results that they are very pleased with, and have sort of concluded as a consortium again there that we think that Brockham is likely to be very similar to Horse Hill, and in some respects could be even better. So we have a small interest there of 5%, but the difference there is it's a producing field, or it was until recently a producing field. So we are hopeful, albeit that we're pre-revenue currently, that Alba may well be a revenue generating company in the very near future. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and as Amitsoq, tell us all about that and what you're looking forward to in the next 12 months.
Yeah, well, on Amitsoq, we started off as an earn-in there and just modestly spending a bit of money to see what we thought of it. And as we spent a bit of money, we liked it more and more. So we were coming up with results from our initial field trips and sampling and lab work that was showing the grade of graphite there to be amongst the highest grades of any graphite projects in the world. This is a project that was in production, albeit about 100 years ago, but that is a very good base to start from. It was a producing asset, and that's something that we're always very keen to find where we can, is something that's got a track record. Perhaps it was in the doldrums for whatever reason, or it wasn't. Modern mining techniques and exploration techniques were not used because it was so long ago. We've gone back in. We're employing those sorts of methods, such as an extensive airborne electromagnetic survey that we did late last year. And as a result of that, we found significant graphite zones. So we're talking about potentially 12 Ks or more of strike. So that, combined with the fact that the grades are plus 25%, is a very, very strong base for us to now go forward. That's why we bought into it and took a majority stake of 90% with the right to go to 100%. And that's why we're going back in this year, again, fairly modestly to start with, to go back into the field, prove up, we hope, some of these extensive graphite targets with a view to going back later in the year and drilling. So that's the plan in a nutshell for Amitsoq. And, you know, we're very pleased with the fact we've sort of gone into that. And it gives our shareholders another string to the bow, if you like. If we're not busy on the oil and gas front, then we're busy on the mining front, certainly at Amitsoq.
Yeah, and as far as you said later on this year, I mean, have you any sort of detailed plans on when you expect to do that, or is it towards the end of the year, or it's in the first quarter of the second half, or what?
We've just submitted our work program to the Greenland authorities. Normally, it only takes a few weeks for a response to come through on that. So we'd hope, subject to planning and logistics, to be out in the field, in the next couple of months, certainly. So we should be getting some good news flow from Amitsoq as a result of that. The oil and gas side of things, again, there's going to be some key decisions coming up. We obviously know that Angus would like to put the Kimmeridge at Brockham into production as soon as possible, and they're working on that as we speak. And at Horse Hill, we know that a planning outcome is imminent in the next couple of months, so there'll be a lot of activity thereafter at Horse Hill. So I'd say that the next 3 to 6 months are looking to be very busy for Alba.
Excellent stuff. Well, George at Vox Markets, you know, on the daily podcast here, I highlight the top five most followed companies. So for now, if someone's not following you but likes what you're looking at and your investments there, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
I think they should follow us, Justin, for three reasons. One is Amitsoq. Graphite is a massively growth commodity. It's used in electric vehicles. We've got a project here that's looking very strong in terms of its fundamentals. That's number one. Number two, I guess, is pretty obvious. It's Horse Hill. We've got a significant investment in what appears to be a very, very large oil play from all the results that we've had to date. And we're on the cusp of, we hope, a positive and outcome in planning that will enable us to really push forward with Horse Hill into the third and fourth quarter of this year. And thirdly, Brockham. We have a small interest, but it's potentially a very significant one because it could produce revenue for Alba in the short to medium term. So that also is another reason to be following us.
Excellent. George, good to speak to you. And like I say, you've got a bit of news flow hopefully coming up in the next couple of months, and quite a busy period for you. So hopefully we chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much, George.
Thanks, Justin. I appreciate your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hamish Harris, chairman of Gunsyn. That's G-U-N, ticker. Hamish, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here.
Now, for people not aware of Gunsyn, tell us, in a summary, what it's all about, please, Hamish.
Well, Gunsyn's an investing company which looks into investing in natural resources. Not sort of a strictly normal investment policy of just buying listed shares. We're more of the old sort of fashion merchant banking sort of model. We try and invest and add value to our positions via various means, and then extract value for shareholders.
Excellent stuff. And so take us through some of your investments, and by all means, go into some of the detail there on the investments that you think have imminent or potential news flow in the next sort of 3 to 6 months.
Well, our major holdings are Oyster Oil and Gas, TSX is the company with an oil license in Madagascar. They've announced in the past that they're looking to farm out that deal. There should be some news flow coming on that sort of thing. They're also potentially looking at a London listing, they've made clear, which will be great news for everyone. obviously on the back of other successful TSX companies coming across, like another one of our holdings, Zenith Energy, which has done very well since they listed in their IPO. Obviously looking for some new flow from them as well, because they're doing a sidetrack in Azerbaijan as we speak. So hopefully, possibly this week or next week, we have some results from that. That would be a good catalyst, I think, for share price movement with a bit of luck. Also, we've also got some Alba, which has obviously been involved in the Brockham well. So potentially that should, we know that the results there look outstanding and similar to Horse Hill. So hopefully in the near future we'll get some production numbers out of that. Alba's got a decent stake there, so that would be good for us. And our other thing which we've put some money into lately is a company called Sunshine Minerals, which is a private company, which has got a couple of licences in the Solomon Islands, one bauxite and one nickel laterite. Now, the nickel laterite one we find particularly interesting. That part of the Solomon Islands, that particular island where they are, Inco has drilled thousands of holes in the past. There's another ASX company which is very close by with a significant market cap. So if you look at their market cap and the amount of all that they've got compared to the Jojovo license, which we've got a letter of intent on, then work out what our 20% of Sunshine Minerals will be worth. We've done particularly well on there, and we think it's worth many multiples of the money we put in.
Yeah, well, interesting enough, I've just spoken to sort of George, who'll be on the podcast today, George from Alba Minerals, and he's pretty bullish about the rest of 2017. And as regards Oyster Oil and Gas, just go through, what do you know about them? Because obviously, because they're listed in Toronto, we know very little over here about them. What do you know about Oyster Oil and Gas there, Hamish?
Well, the CEO is actually an ex-heritage oil chap, Mike Wood. So I've got three things we like them, obviously. Particularly good asset. We like the asset, like the geology down there. Light oil, not sort of heavy oil that other people have got, a different play. Afrin spent quite a lot of money on that block, and they picked it up cheaply, which is great. Well, particularly good management. Mike Wood's very, very switched on, well-respected chap in London. Obviously, with a heritage oil background, did some quality work there. So we like both the management and we like the asset too, which thinks a great combination.
Yeah, and did you say that they're looking to list over here? Is that right?
Well, they have mentioned at some stage they wouldn't mind coming to London. Obviously, this has been a good deal for us. We put our first money in at 0.2. The shares are now 0.4, so we also got some warrants that are putting in the money in at 0.2. So, our initial investment's up 100%, so we're particularly pleased with this investment.
Yeah, and I know when I spoke to, quite a few times I spoke to Andrea Catania from Zenith, and he's glad he made the move over to London, because he said the liquidity is a lot better over here. And
I believe he said that they traded more shares in one day than had in a year in Toronto. I think I'm correct in saying that. So yeah, look, Eco Atlantic has come across a number of Canadian oil and gas companies have come across with success. So look, that's obviously something a number of them are looking at doing at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, listen, Hamish, on the podcast, I do highlight a top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. So if somebody's listening right now not following you, give us three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Well, I think the first reason, our recent investment track record, and as I said, our Venice investment's done particularly well, Oyster shares have done particularly well. I mean, as I said, 0.2 to 0.4, we're well up on Alba, so I think that track record speaks for itself. The other thing to mention is obviously our market cap. It's far easier at companies from £1 million to £10 million than it is from £10 million to £100 to £1 billion. Mm-hmm. So I think that the leverage there, factor there, is enormous. And the third thing I would say is that the imminent news flow on a number of fronts. We're expecting, as I said, some production numbers from Brockham, which will affect Alba. We're obviously looking at some news from Zenith Energy in terms of their sidetrack, and we're also in Sunshine Minerals. We're expecting, hopefully, get a prospecting license in the very near future from them too.
Excellent, Hamish. Good to chat to you. And like you said, you've got so many investments. There's always news coming out. So hopefully, we'll chat again soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. John, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. And the market is in good shape for mining shares as well.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've seen the last few days, I've seen a couple of people on social media moaning about a lack of liquidity. And I think since the start of May, yesterday or whatever, it has slowed down a bit in the junior cap space, you know? And there are lots of people moaning. And I think it's just the start of May, I think. You know, it may liven up. But there we are. But it has been a good run of late, isn't it?
That's an interesting thought. There has been some volatility with iron ore prices pulling back, and copper prices actually came off this morning as well. But metals prices are up and down a lot at the moment, and I think that's symptomatic of the environment that we're in general. But yeah, the small cap space still seems to be relatively firm.
Yeah, it's almost like, are we at the start of a bigger bull market here, or are we about to correct? People are not quite sure, are they? I've heard some people say we are at the start of a massive upswing in this resource sector. What's your feeling on that?
I feel that we are part way through a larger upswing. Maybe we're a third way into it. Mm. And it reminds me of a saying: never sell a bull market till it's over. So, you know, I think it's important that people listen to that. The other thing that the wise old guys in the markets do is, you know, when they've made their money back on a stock, don't forget to take some of the stake money out. That keeps investors' finances intact. And remember, I think we're coming through to a period where more companies are raising money. They're reloading on their finances. They can see valuations have gone up. There's a better market in place. Institutions are now playing again, and that is very important. And institutions, well, we've seen institutions buying existing stock. I don't think I should mention any names, but there was an institution buying Georgian Mining over the last week. So, you know, we're seeing new players back into the market again, players who haven't been in the market for some years. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's look at an individual company. What are you looking at? What's interesting at the moment, John?
Well, I think this week Kodal Minerals is interesting. We are waiting with bated breath to see confirmation of the Chinese financing there. They're looking to put another £4.3 million into Kodal. They already put £500,000 in. They did that very quickly. And then they said they'll put the rest of the money in, subject to due diligence. The company has confirmed that the due diligence has been done. It's been done correctly and properly, and everybody's happy with it. So we're really waiting for the Chinese to sign the contract. And whilst that hasn't been done yet, we think that's got to be very close, and I suspect there's a little bit of argy-bargy negotiation going on around the edges. I'm not expecting the price of that financing to change. So I think that's the key thing from an investment perspective. If that doesn't change, that's good for Kodal. Yesterday they announced some very nice lithium grades out of a couple of the other prospects within the Bagumi license area. That's nice. We sat down and we talked to various Chinese lithium processors, and this is the type of lithium-bearing material that they like. This is lithium in spodumene that comes out of pegmatite pipes. It's good quality stuff. It's just what the Chinese are looking for. They did previously make an offer for Birimian Limited for their lithium resource. That effectively got rejected by Birimian. It was a $107 million offer from the Chinese, very good offer. And it seems that some of the Australian shareholders at Birimian thought that wasn't enough, and I'm not sure what happened exactly. The Chinese, I think, felt a bit slighted. The Australians didn't give them time to get the money out of China and move it into Australia, which is challenging these days. It's not so easy for companies to move the money around, out of China to buy assets. They can move money out to buy concentrates and materials like that. To actually buy assets, it's a different matter. So I think this is all happening. I don't know whether the Chinese will go back and revisit their offer for Birimian. But certainly with Kodal, we expect that to push through and for the Chinese to support Kodal on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, and is there any suggestion of sort of time period here? Any indications?
No indication from the company as yet. But my thinking is it's got to be this week or next week. I mean, I know the Chinese can procrastinate for ages and ages, but I think they'll sign this fairly quickly. They want to do this deal. And the results coming through from Kodal make it even more enticing than it was before. So, I don't think Kodal would necessarily turn around at the last minute and say, well, we want a higher price or we want more money. But you never know with the results they've just put on the screen. 8 meters at 1.62% lithium. And other similar-ish grades. I mean, those are very nice numbers. So there's
Just for people, John, who are not quite aware of Kodal, can you give a brief summary as to where they are and what they're about, please?
Oh, they are exploring for lithium in Mali. They have a defined lithium. I'm not sure I should call it ore body as yet, but they are working their way up to a resource. And what's key is it's very close to a lithium resource as defined by a company called Birimian Limited, which is listed in Australia, and which the Chinese offered to buy for 107 million Aussie dollars. So, you know, we know that they're in the right area. We know the Chinese are interested. We know that the drilling is producing good numbers. And there is every indication that Kodal will get a proper lithium resource here.
Marvellous. Cool. So KOD is the ticker there. Worth putting on your watch list, probably, if news is that imminent. John, as ever, thanks very much, and speak next week.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell from Spreadex, a financial analyst. Connor, how are you, fella? You all right?
Very good, thank you. Yeah.
And we haven't spoken for a few. I was away last week, you were the week before, and we've been talking about your away, and you're not a big fan of the beach and the hot weather.
No, I think last time I went to a beach, I just stood up for an hour because I didn't want to get a sand over myself.
Just standing there thinking, what am I doing here? What's the point of this?
Yeah.
I know what you mean sometimes. I'm not a big fan of beach. I don't mind the pool, though, sitting on the pool. You know?
Yeah, no, I love the pool. Yeah. If I do go to a beach, I will just bob in the sea for about 4 hours and then try and avoid
sharks.
As long as I can.
That's hard, actually. If you're in the sea and trying to avoid the sand, because there is that in a border of sand. between the sea and the road or whatever, the promenade. Yeah, okay, all right. Well, let's look at more irrelevant things, I suppose, than our life. And that's companies. And I know Sainsbury's released today, and they've taken a bit of a hit. Look at the share price is down 2%, and it looks like full year profits are down 8.2% to 503 million. So it's a tough time for them. But who else releasing this week, Connor?
Well, following on from Sainsbury's, you've got Morrison's tomorrow, which is sort of a completely different story to Sainsbury's, really. You know, the supermarket sector is a tough sector at the moment. It's one of the sectors that's going to be... It was already in a heated price war before inflation started to creep higher and higher. And that's only going to, you know, continue in the second half of the year, really. Mm. But Morrison's, you know, Morrison's was doing very poorly, was really, really struggling a couple of years ago. But since David Potts has taken over as CEO, the supermarket's seen a remarkable turnaround, really, culminating in its first full year rise in profit for 6 years, I think, reported back in March. You know, that's some turnaround, and that's expected to continue into the first quarter, which Morrison's reporting those figures tomorrow. I think like-for-like sales are expected to be up 1.7%, which would mark the sixth consecutive like-for-like growth quarterly growth for the company, which is, again, considering where it was before David Potts took over, it's doing incredibly well. Part of it's, you know, it's been very busy. You know, it's signed up with deals with Ocado and, more importantly, Amazon. It's launched its own clothing brand, Nutmeg, which, you know, to compete with you know, it's sort of bigger supermarket siblings that have got that extra revenue stream.
Yeah,
it's just doing very, very well at the moment.
And the share price has done really well, hasn't it? Back in the end of November 2016, it was like 140. It's now 240. So I added a pound there. To me, Nutmeg, the brand Nutmeg for clothes, I don't know, it doesn't do it for me, Nutmeg. I'm wearing Nutmeg. It just sounds a bit childish, you know?
I think when I went, I was in a Morrison's, oddly enough, on Monday, and it did look very childish. I'm not quite sure if it's
maybe it is for kids.
Kiddie. I think they might have expanded into women's wear, and you know, I think it is one of the areas they will probably look to expand in. And obviously, like I said, the tie up, like the deals they've got with Amazon and a car. It just sort of it just diversifying its sort of brand a bit more,
yeah,
and
yeah.
giving it perhaps different areas to sort of negate the oncoming inflation squeeze that perhaps Sainsbury's backs at the moment. It is interesting, you know, Sainsbury's is at least down south is a lot more visible brand, has I think a wider reach across the country, but is just struggling at the moment.
Yeah, yeah,
compared
yeah.
to Morrison's. Then obviously you've got Tesco at the top, which, you know, seems safely ensconced at the top of the supermarket table, really.
Yeah,
so, you know, it's got the clout to withstand any pressures.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be interesting to see if Morrison's can break that 250, because they hit 250. And, like, on charts, almost very simplified, but, I mean, charts and technical analysis seem to like round figures, don't they, on a simplified basis. And I hit 250, I tried to get there again, couldn't quite do it, start, was this, in February. And it's just creeping back up now. It sort of fell back to around about 230. It'd be interesting to see if their results can push them above that, or whether that's a top, basically, and whether they'll come back a bit. But anyway, who else is reporting this week?
Next would be the other big company this week. Next, again, opposite story to Morrison's, has really, really struggled, not only in 2017, but, you know, going back to 2016 as well. It had a horrendous fall at the start of the year. I think basically it was something like the 4th of January. As soon as it could, basically, Next locked off 14% in value,
yeah,
after issuing a really shoddy post-Christmas update. However, it sort of pulled off a bit of a coup in March with its full-year figures, despite posting its first full-year drop in pre-tax profit for 8 years and a 2.9% drop in total retail sales, and warning that profit would suffer in its fiscal 2017. The stock somehow managed to rise 8% following its results. I think investors were probably expecting something so bad that even those very bad figures managed to eke out some good news. I think it also helped that Lord Wolfson said that the company would be moving back towards its heartland product that it perhaps neglected in the last couple of years, away from the sort of seasonal, cyclical fashion that left sort of caught it out a few times. You know, it was one of the companies that repeatedly complained about unseasonal weather and how that had impacted its lines.
Yeah.
So if it can move back towards a more heartland product, which I guess would also help it eat into some of Marks and Spencer's
share,
you know,
yeah,
share, really. You know, Marks and Spencer's does also follow those seasonal, cyclical fashion things, but also Marks and Spencer's is known for, you know, your bread and butter basics like underwear and things like that, especially on the women's wear side of things. So if Next can boost that area once again, I think it could be, it's not going to be a massive turnaround, but it does help maybe shore it up somewhat for what could be a pretty difficult retail situation in the rest of the year.
Yeah, like I said, I think they did. They were very clever marketing there. They were almost putting the bad news out there before the results, weren't they? They were sort of super bad. They were in the weekend press, but I remember people saying in the weekend press there were some really negative comments about their trading update that was coming ahead. And then all of a sudden, when it did, you know, give a trading update, it wasn't as bad as they'd been screaming about. So it had a bit of a relief rally. But, you know, me and a couple of mates do an experiment, and it's called, what was it, 1,000 to £100,000 in 50 trades or less. We've done two, and it's achieving 10% profit on each, and it's bigger stocks. And we've done 10% with EasyJet, and then 10% with Sky, and we've placed a limit order in. When they were about £40 and 30 pence, at just below 40 quid, and they've rallied since we put our order in. It was a couple of weeks ago. But it'll be interesting to see now if it comes back on these figures, you know, if the figures are good, because it's at a level now where I think it needs to break higher, because we are at that level it's tested before, and it's struggling at this, like, 43, 50, 43, 60 level. So it'll be interesting to see if it breaks higher on this news, or whether it drops a bit lower, you know?
I think its figures themselves aren't meant to be great. You know, it's too soon for any kind of turnaround to really have taken hold. I think, like, group sales are expected to be down 1.9% in the first 3 months of the year. However, again, if they can update and say that, you know, we're doing X, Y, and Z to mitigate this situation, and we are moving towards, you know, back towards these bread and butter products and things like that. I think this update is quite soon after the last one, so I'm not sure if it'll get the same kind of relief boost, but it will be interesting to see. I think it depends what else is in the update alongside that group sales decline to try and mitigate any bad news, really.
It is,
I think that is going to be the case for Next in the coming month. That's just mitigating its bad news until it can perhaps get get back on its feet again.
That's it. When you think about it, we are like more than half of where they were at their peak, you know, almost like a year and a half ago. So, you know, it's all baked in there, isn't it? And anything we see now is a bit of a relief rally, almost like as if, oh, it can't get any worse now, because we've seen the massive drop-off in share price. So now we're bumping along the bottom. I think we'll see a couple of small rallies. But until, like I said, they've proven they've got a sustained growth happening here back to where they sort of were, I think it won't make any marked improvement in the share price until we see that. Maybe 5, 10, maximum 20%, but no more than that, I don't think. But there we are. Cool. Well, I look forward to that tomorrow, and because I'm looking at Next and as a potential investment for our experiment. Connor, thanks very much. Speak next week, fella.
Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5. Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, of course, had Greg on the podcast yesterday. At 4, most followed, Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR, had Nicola on the podcast earlier today. Look at the chart of BNR, you can see that on the blog page. By the way, that's voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. At 3, it's a new stock on me. I did see it rise yesterday, I think. Photon Star, LED Group, that's PSL ticker. At 2, it's always there. Most followed company on Vox Markets, Ascent Resources, AST. And number one most followed company in the last 24 hours on Vox Markets. I did a blog on them the weekend. It's MySquare, MYSQ. I'm worth doing some research here at this level, I think. All right, here are the top 5 most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, or specifically this morning, I think. At 5, John Mayer just covered them on the podcast. Codal Minerals, KOD. Further high-grade lithium mineralization at Bogoni. At 4, Audioboom, ticker, boom. Final results. Hopefully going to have Rob, the CEO of Audioboom, on the podcast very soon. At 3, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL, operations update. At 2, 88 Energy. At 88, Ice Wine 2 drilling on schedule. Or schedule, depending where you're from. And number 1. The most liked RNS on the Vox Markets platform this morning is from Premier African Minerals. That's Prem is a ticker. And there's RHA and Zulu Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.